Welcome to the Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm John Barbin, and with me today is Sean Rafferty. Sean came in fourth in our last transformation contest, and Sean looked really good. And I think you might have been one of the most muscular people in our contest. Your after pictures were pretty impressive. And I think one of the things I noticed is you actually took really good after pictures. Like you did a good job with those. So welcome to the call, first of all.
Thank you.
And what did you think when you saw your pictures before and after, like side by side?
I was pretty stoked. I actually had someone at work that kind of befriended a couple weeks before the contest was over, a photographer, and I just asked him if he could take some pictures, and kindly enough, he said yeah. So we went in for a couple sessions and changed up the lighting a couple different times, and yeah, it made a big difference because, you know, like you said, just the way the lighting goes on it, it helps bring out a lot of definition and, you know, strangulations and all that. Like seeing my shoulders on the side tricep shot was just awesome.
Yeah. Well, so the lighting does make. Oh, yeah. And until you've actually had the lighting set up properly, you'd never know how much difference it makes. Do you remember any of it? Like, do you remember how it was set up that you could some.
Yeah, one session we went with just a simple lighting, where we had a kind of a soft light up above, or flash as it were, and, that was the first one that I did for the Lee Bill contest, but my, sides, my body was kind of blending in with the black background, so we changed it up a little, and then he added a backlight, but he had about, three different flashes going on for a lot of the shots and a couple one of the others, mm-hmm. along with some reflective gear as well. So pretty intense. I was fortunate to have it available to me.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That, and it does make a difference, and it helps. It really helps bring things out. So I'm glad that's good that you had that. I'm glad you had that.
Yeah, it does. Although, I mean, kind of like you did with the Benjamin knee bomb, you know, sometimes just the shots out in the sun can work as well if you've got the look. So that was cool, too.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. I do like the fact that you had somebody who actually knew what they were doing with lighting to show, like, yeah, your picture showed up really well. And then, like, exactly your example, that then Ben just went outside and got really good angles and shadows there too. So it's cool to be able to see them head to head because everyone can pull off a really good lighting if they want to. Same with Kadhafi. He just did it by himself at home with one light in the room. So it's all doable. So anyway, how'd you find us then? Let's just, everyone's path to us is kind of different. So how'd you end up with
well,
the
AI
community?
I'm a huge audio learner. So I listen to a ton of podcasts, and, one day I just decided to search for a fitness podcast, and came across Jimmy Smith, and liked what I heard, subscribed. A couple months later, was reading his blog, and he did a pretty long, extensive interview with Pylon, which caught my attention. I'd never heard of intermittent fasting before,
right?
And I liked what Brad had to say.
His last name is pronounced Pylon. That's actually pretty funny.
And I've heard it several times before, but I've always read it Pylon.
So. Yeah. So anyway, so you heard an interview with Brad.
So I heard the interview. Actually, I read the interview with him, and then I subscribed to his ESE spam, and never received such useful, informative drip mail before. So I subscribed to a feed in my reader, and he plugs AI occasionally, and eventually told myself I'd probably do AI once I got bored of my workout routine, and eventually subscribed to your guys' podcast, really liked it, became an addict of your blog, and I guess it was towards the end of Donna's transformation number two that Jason took, that I was just getting sick of my workout routine that I had done before, mm-hmm. and I was only getting into the gym once or twice a week because it wasn't spurring me on. So I said, all right, it's time to try something new. And so that's kind of how I found you guys.
Well, that's pretty cool. Okay, and then what got you – so how was Eat Stop Eat for you? Were you actually doing Eat Stop Eat?
Yeah, I started Eat Stop Eat probably in June of 2009, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the concept. I probably dropped about, 5 or 6 pounds or so just from doing the fasts. But eventually I plateaued and wasn't losing anymore because I wasn't really modifying my diet in between the fasts.
Mm-hmm.
And listening to your guys' podcast is what I think really changed my mindset into I got to adjust my diet in between. I mean, Eat Solid Eat, I think, is a real great tool for, I guess, maintenance as well. But for some reason, I just didn't want to give up, my big eating in between, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Eventually I did, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've known other people to overcompensate after starting Eat Stop Eat. They have a drop, and then they just learn to eat their way back up. So
yeah.
That even though they're dedicated to the fast, they're also just overcompensating. So that's not the first time I've heard of that. So
yeah, it wasn't so much a huge overcompensation for coming off the fast. It was just I wasn't dropping my calories in between to make much of a difference on the scale.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, no, yeah, exactly. I wasn't even. Yeah, you're right. Sorry, I should have clarified. I didn't mean like the meal after the fast. I just meant general. Yeah, just in general, like a scaling of calories. So what did you do as far as working out before us? How long have you been training, anyways?
I'm 34 now. Started lifting out in junior high. Got more serious with high school football and lifted pretty intensely in college before I blew out my left ACL when I was 19 on the last day of spring practice for football at a community college. Continued lifting through rehab pretty intensely, and then 2 years later I blew out my other ACL playing basketball.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, that sucks. So I became a double bona fide athlete with the double ACL.
Yeah, no kidding.
As far as programs, the only books or programs I've ever really kind of followed other than, a little bit of I went through the whole Muscle Mag thing, kind of like everyone else on the forum, my college years. And then I got Bill Phillips' Body for Life program.
Yep.
And used that to slim down for my wedding. And then I got in pretty good shape. And then I went to Germany, got married over there. And in the 6 months of German food and me being the cook, I just put on a bunch of weight. also did the testosterone diet. Kent Rodell books or something like that. I like the workout programs in that, but that was the one that I was kind of using. And I remember my beginning dialogue with Brad, and was telling him about the whole macronutrients of, hey, do you think this is a good one? Or it was like, 35% fat and the rest split evenly between carbs and protein. And I liked Brad's response. It was kind of like, you know what, that's great. He didn't really try to argue with people much, and I think that was a good approach, just to kind of get them in, and then you eventually, listen to you guys and just get a whole bunch of things just demystified. I mean, the whole thing about the protein and, worrying about my muscles melting away if I'd be fasting, that was really helpful. Now I don't even bother counting protein grams at all. Don't take protein powder, and I love it. It's so freeing.
So did you obviously subscribe to that to some degree beforehand then, the concept of protein?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean, getting the protein powder and doing the shakes.
Mm-hmm.
I never really did any of the weight gainer shakes because I was always didn't have a problem gaining weight, but definitely on the protein.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, just before reading Brad's interview with Jimmy Smith, I remember Jimmy writing in one blog post about, make sure you have enough protein right before going to bed because, they don't call it breakfast, for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And, him advocating just having a good protein meal right before going to bed.
Yeah, and then he interviews Brad of all people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like the guy who wrote the How Much Protein book.
Yeah, that was a helpful PDF to read as well.
Really. Oh, did you read that one?
Oh,
Yeah. We're in the middle of, he's in the middle of revamping it and adding some stuff to it and updating it. So there's going to be a new version soon.
Oh man, it's so hard to get that into the hands of people that I see at the gym or down at Trader Joe's. People looking at all the Greek yogurt and stuff like that, and just it's so many people would be freed if they would just read that one, you know, book.
That one document. Well, I still have protein guilt. Do you have it? Where you just feel
no,
like you, still
you know,
have
one thing
a bit?
I've totally discovered over these past two contests is I'm a carb freak. I mean, I'm just addicted to carbs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I enjoy eating my protein, but it's not the thing that's where I feel like I have to get it in. I mean, really, literally, after reading that ebook, I just didn't care. I didn't count protein anymore. I mean, I, you know, still make sure I get protein in every meal, but not so much just because I think I have to have it.
Right, right.
It's just because, you know, it's filling and, you know, it's become part of, you know, my food nature.
Right, so it's not anything that weighs on your mind anymore.
Mm-mm. Not at all.
Yeah.
Very helpful.
I think that is helpful. I mean, I'm trying to rid myself of it, but every now and then I have a twinge when I eat something and I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe there's supposed to be some protein in here somewhere. And then I stop and I'm like, I can't believe I still do this. You know, like I should be able to just eat something that has no, like, that I don't know the protein content and don't care.
Yeah, so when you have your donut in the morning, do you make sure you get some protein with that?
Well, I can't. Well, no, I don't. That's the point. So I somewhere in my head, like, you know, somewhere in my head, I'm like, well, you know, the next time I eat today, there probably should be at least some protein in that.
That's funny. I could just see you jugging around a little protein shaker and chugging your protein milk with after eating a nice donut.
Yeah, just to compensate,
oh,
right? And then just up the total calories. So, yeah, no, it's not that bad. It's more that I still have twinges of it, and then I notice the twinge. And I'm like, man, I can't believe that this still happens. But I guess it was just so in our head for so long. But
yeah. It's nailed into us.
It oh man, is it ever? So okay, so then I guess we might as well just talk more about that. Like what? I mean, like aha moments or things that changed from the way you used to view working out and fitness versus once you kind of started hanging around?
Well, the biggest one was the protein one. Fasting really helped out because, you know, it helps me lose, you know, a good amount of fat in a short spurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I was one of those ones in the forums that, you know, advocated the longer fasts. Eventually, you know, I think also as a way to just lose quicker, mm-hmm. I went beyond the 24-hour fast and started experimenting, you know, with three meals in a row. And then eventually I really loved and I actually dug the four-meal fast where, you know, I would skip dinner and then not eat the rest of the day and or next day that is. And that whole next day I would actually feel the burn in my belly and I would actually enjoy it. You know, it wasn't something that was, like, bad or difficult.
Yeah.
Then and I eventually did like the 3-day fast and that was tough, but it was a nice challenge, more so a mental challenge than anything.
Sure.
But eventually, especially, when I got around to probably the 1.4, 1.45 stage, I just started loathing fasting. And
interesting.
I remember your interview with Richard and, Hasmo, as I call him, that guy, you know, took it to the extreme and, you know, which is cool. It totally worked for him. And, I think he told me that I kind of motivated him initially, but you told him that eventually he wasn't going to be able to fast as long or as much because it would get more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally experienced that same phenomenon.
Yeah. Yeah. Two things as you're losing, I mean, when you're much bigger, I think you can handle longer fasts because
right.
there's just more fat to come off. And I'm not so sure that the fat probably might even come off. I think there might be a rate limiting step there. And when there's more fuel you're carrying around in the form of fat, you might be able to access it a little bit quicker, smoother. I'm not really sure what the answer is there, but it does seem that as everyone approaches leaner body weights, it becomes more difficult to just fast it away.
Yeah, and then also with respect to, I think one of the reasons I was having difficulty as well is not only it becoming more difficult during the fast, like to start out with this contest, the first 2 weeks I ended the week on the Monday and Tuesday with a full 2-day fast.
Okay.
And then on the third week I fasted like 1 day and then I weighed in and really was happy with my measurements, and then I just stopped it, and I think the next week I tried to do it again, and I couldn't even complete it, and as that's when I first started realizing around week four or so how much difficult the fasts were becoming.
Mm-hmm.
But I eventually read somewhere else about something called a refeed. And I don't know if leptin levels or things of that nature, but I realized that after I was coming off of, you know, a fast, that I was just, you know, having a very difficult time eating anything less than, you know, I don't know, 1,800, 2,000 calories around my RMR.
Oh, really? You just wanted to put it all right? You wanted to be back up to maintenance?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was something where I wouldn't plan it in my calories, you know, because I extensively, definitely OCD, when it comes to this, planned out my calories and charted out things and thought, okay, if I take in this much, I should weigh it this amount and, you know, took multiple measurements on my waist, you know, pushing it in, pushing it out, and at rest as well. But I just couldn't handle it after, you know, a fast. I would just oftentimes, you know, go anywhere from 500 to 1,000 calories over what I had planned for that day, and I'd be ticked off at myself. But then eventually, I, you know, read about refeeds. And,
so then how did you proceed? So this happened around week four?
You know, I don't think I started reading about refeeds until like week 10 or so. But I realized around that week four, and probably even a little bit before that, that just coming off of the fasts were, you know, I was overeating. I wasn't eating what I had planned for, and
sure.
I'd planned for eating something like less than 1,000 calories on average almost every week, but I never hit it. I always ended up right around that 1,400, I think, was my average for the whole contest, and I remember listening to Rich's interview,
yeah.
And him and I are about to have similar builds and muscle, mm-hmm. and frame as well. And I remember him saying that he came in at about that much as well. And I think you also said that, you know, you added in the cardio just because you couldn't stand going below like 1,200 calories or something.
Yeah. So did you just kind of abandon the fasting and just kind of go with a sort of an AGD approach at that point?
No, I wish I could say I did, but I still continue the fasting. One of my most difficult challenges was at work. And this may sound reminiscent of Wes Granger's, but staying away from the free sweets.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I had a very difficult time, you know, staying away from the free food, as it were. And so I'd often binge and then have to try to compensate by, you know, doing the fasts.
And, oh, I see.
And plus, the fasts were so ingrained into me, that was just part of the way that I was going to, you know, hit that deficit, because there's no better way to get a big chunk out of your deficit than by doing that.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
To still be able to, you know, enjoy life, you know, with the wife on the weekends and, you know, things of that nature.
Well, I mean, you still made a big change. So, I mean, it's there's not necessarily the perfect way to do this. There's just the way you find out how it works for you.
True.
So was that the biggest challenge then for the contest, was just managing the calories?
Yeah, you know, I had some other things that I had, like last contest for AT3, I had something that just completely derailed me from the contest in October, and, you know, just changed everything in my life, and for myself, my family, and one of the things that came to my mind was, in prior podcasts that I had listened with you and Brad, was mentioning how we can only take so much stress at one time.
Right.
And, you know, if you're, you know, trying to diet and, you know, got a crazy job situation, there's only so many different stresses you could add, you know, to your life and be successful at any one of them. So back then, that was really helpful for me to know, because that just, you know, kind of gave me the permission to bow out of the contest and, you know, not put my family under additional stress by being in a deficit and fasting, and, you know, because they needed me, and it was really helpful to be able to just walk away from it. So.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. And I'm glad you raised that point, because it's also a priority thing. Like,
yeah.
There's always another contest. There's always another 12-week run. It sounds like you were having some major life-changing events that obviously take precedent over,
yeah,
a 12, I mean, there's always another time to start. And it's the difference between an excuse and then something that's, yeah, okay, this is just overwhelmingly too much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as far as the other issue is, yeah, you hit it right on, is just, for me, with the calories. I mean, to be honest, one of the other challenges was in the first 4 weeks of the contest, I probably worked out like four times because I had like a shoulder injury that I had got just from like, I don't know, I started the MBF program like a week or so before AT4 and just tweaked my shoulder. It was weird. And went to a chiropractor, so I was nursing that, and, you know, literally maybe four times in the first 4 weeks. But I knew that I'd been working out for so long that, you know, the muscle was underneath, and I just needed to shed the fat.
Right. So what program did you proceed with after that?
I went back to the power segment of 3-0.
Yeah.
Worked through that, worked through the entire chest booster, not in the course of a month, but over the course of 3 months.
Yeah.
Did some of the back booster, played around with the shoulder and arm boosters as well, and then I think I went into hypertrophy after that.
And that was fine on your shoulder for whatever you tweaked?
Yeah, yeah. It was staying away from the barbell, I think, was helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big deal for me. That's why I have so much dumbbell work in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's the barbells. If there's any pre-existing shoulder injury, even if there isn't, there's any asymmetry in your body gets exacerbated so badly and so quickly with a barbell. So that's for everyone listening, that's the reason why I have so much dumbbell work. So you can choose to do a barbell if you want, but just be aware that if you have anything at all, anywhere, that's asymmetrical or an injury somewhere, the barbell brings it out right away.
Yeah, the funny thing about it was I loved squatting growing up, and I hadn't been doing that much squatting because, you know, in 3-0 there's no squatting pretty much.
Yeah.
And so getting back in MBF doing squats, it was on that exercise that I felt a twitch in my shoulder. And then, you know, tried to do bench press thereafter, and I'm like, I stopped halfway through. I'm like, nah, not today. And then it just got progressively worse. It was a trip.
Oh, interesting. So you tweaked the shoulder under a squat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard a couple of my powerlifting buddies that's happened to them. Just holding the bar on your back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which is weird because, I mean, I used to be a pretty heavy squatter back in the day, and, you know, I've always loved squatting, and, you know, getting back into it, it sucked.
Yeah, and of all the things, it wasn't the two ACL surgery knees, it was the shoulder.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, of all the things to go under a squat, you wouldn't expect that.
No, never had issues with my shoulder before either.
Oh, man. Is it healed now?
Yeah, it's cool.
Good.
It's cool.
Have you tested a squat yet or no?
Yeah, I went back to the squat, and, you know, the weight's pretty down there, but no problems there. Now it's my right bicep, but that's all right.
Oh, man. It's just migrating, right? It's just moving around?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. All right. So, anyways, so then talk about how has your perception of yourself changed?
Oh, yeah. Definitely the confidence level's gone up. I mean, yeah, you hear other guys talk about it on the podcast or on the forum, and but until you get there, you just don't realize how much the change it is. You know, just putting, you know, buying some new clothes and not being afraid to, like, wear tighter-fitting clothes or, you know, the athletic cut. And,
yeah,
you know, it's like night and day difference. Like my wife said, I hardly recognize you. I mean, I like it, but it's like you're different. That's not the Sean I know.
Is there other people who are struggling to adjust? I mean,
no,
like the same as your wife?
No, I mean, you know, I remember my mom making a comment like, oh, you're fine, you don't need to lose any more weight. And I'm like, no, I still want to lose more. No, don't. But, I mean, if anything, I haven't really experienced too much of the extreme on either side. And I'm probably fortunate not to experience both of the extremes.
Sure.
Or either one of the end of the spectrums, as it were. I mean, I've gotten, you know, some guys, you know, saying, oh man, you're losing it quickly, and you're just going to gain it all back. That just means you're going to gain it all back real quick, and, you know, it'll stay on thereafter. And you know, just kind of the uninformed or not necessarily. You know what? I take that back. It's not the uninformed. That is, quote unquote, the informed mindset because of all the junk that, you know, we've bought into over the past from the various media outlets.
Yeah, the people who just feel like as soon as you start changing, they have an opinion about it. But it's interesting that they only start piping up when you're something's starting to happen. But when you're not changing, they don't have anything to say.
Yeah, yeah. It's something else that's kind of interesting. One of the that's really me type of moments is you know, wearing like tank tops and cutoffs in the gym, and you know, using the mirrors actually checking out, you know, the new muscles that I'm seeing. And I remember, you know, seeing when I was a fat boy, I remember looking at guys and going, oh, they're just so vain, you know, looking at themselves. And now I'm that vain guy, you know, looking in the mirror and checking out my own muscles. But one of the other perception things that I've realized is, I don't know, I kind of used to look at guys that, you know, are really in shape or, you know, just, you know, attractive guys, you know, they took good care of themselves and kind of looked upon them with somewhat of, you know, disdain and kind of like probably more so jealousy, as it were, and thinking, oh, you know, that guy's probably a jerk or something like that. And now realizing that how much my perception or awareness, as it were, of people that are just, you know, as Jason Seeker would refer to them as overfat, you know, people, you know, just, wow, it's really everywhere. And man, I used to be that way as well. And trying to, you know, at the same time, not be like, I don't know what the best way to describe it is, a jerk about it or overconfident or you know, just having a negative look upon it of looking down upon people. But, you know, just realizing that, you know, I was there and I can get back there. And, you know, actually I already have a little bit, gained some back after the contest, but yeah, just being aware of kind of that discriminating prejudice or, you know.
Yeah.
It's something that I think is important to kind of keep check on.
That's interesting because you were describing yourself when you were bigger before the contest, doing that to guys who are in shape, and then you become one of those guys that's in shape, and then you look back and you're like, oh, it's not really my place to be doing that back to anybody.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think a lot of people just are protecting themselves when they're doing that. They're, like you said, all those guys are vain. It's like, no, I mean, if they're just not vain. They're proud. They yep. kind of like the way they look, and that's isn't that what you're doing in the gym too?
Yeah, exactly.
You just that's what everyone's doing.
That's
they
what
just,
we all want to do, anyway.
yeah. It's just that when we were all bigger and smoother, there was just nothing to look at in the mirror.
You know? Much so.
Yeah, we took up more space, but you couldn't see any muscle definition. Like when you, there's just nothing to look at. So I get it. And that's a really good, I'm glad you brought that up because if you're looking back at them and then having a prejudice or as it were, then now you're doing the same thing just on either side of the fence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's good that your self-perception changed along the way and you get to the point where you realize it's not really anyone's place to judge anyone else anyways.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of an aha moment where, you know, just of my own perception of others, not just myself.
So that was basically a moment of clarity when you realized that.
Yeah, it was helpful.
Yeah. Okay, so then, well, I guess we're getting moving on to the end here. What advice would you give somebody else that's kind of your body shape and type as far as getting in shape?
Well, specifically to my body shape is I think, you know, a lot of us, if we've been working out for more than, you know, 5 or 10 years, the muscles underneath there, we just need to chisel it out and, you know, shed the fat. So specifically towards people like me, I would say, don't worry so much about the workout, but concentrate mainly on the diet. You know, if you have to, you know, miss, you know, a workout or even, you know, bring the workouts down a little bit due to your life schedule or just you realize that, like, for instance, I realized that rage workouts were just, you know, taking a ton out of me and I would just want to eat like crazy. So I wanted to be careful, even though I did, I think, 2 different sessions of rage during this competition. As well, you know, find out what is causing you, as it were, to overeat. Figure out what your triggers are, both psychological and food ones, and put them to death. Mortify them, but don't expect to happen overnight. You know, there's, I think Brad talked about, you know, just throwing out everything in your cupboards that, you know, you can't handle. Like for me, I stopped buying Nutella, peanut butter, ice cream, cheese, tortillas, white bread. Those are all things that I just had a really difficult time controlling myself with. And I don't know, in hindsight, you know, after the contest, I sometimes wonder if that was such a great idea to completely take it out, because then after the contest, you know, Dan's talked about this of, you know, putting it back on and, you know, how, you know, diligent you need to be, you know, after in maintenance mode. That's why kind of, you know, the whole ATG diet seems to make a lot of sense for you. You know, eat the things that you like, I don't know, in between, as it were, the contest, you know, maybe once or twice a week. I think that would help, you know, the post-contest syndrome where you just want to eat everything in sight. Let's see. Also, if you lack the willpower to hold yourself to a certain challenge or to a certain, like, caloric restriction, for example, find some other motivator that's going to hold you to it, like, you know, putting on a bet with someone. I know one of the most successful times that I had when I was working at that job site in particular, there was another guy that, you know, wanted to lose some weight, and we just came up with a bet and said, all right, you know, for every time we, you know, eat free junk, you know, you got to pay the other person $5. Mm. Eventually we increased that to like $10, and, you know, during that time, it wasn't a temptation. It was just, you know, oh, I'm not touching that. I'm not giving him $10. I think Dan's got something going on where every week he pays, he's going to have to pay someone like $100, you know, if he doesn't hit his, you know, target goal or something of that nature. And I think things like that are really helpful in areas where you realize that you just do lack that willpower. You know, developing that willpower is something that if you haven't had it, and, you know, if you're over fat, as it were, you probably haven't had it in that area. So every little extra, as it were, that you can do, I think, is going to help you achieve your goal. And so I don't think it's, you know, a shortcut or, you know, a wimp's way out. I think it's the smart way to go about it.
Yeah, it's being resourceful. It's just doing what it takes, is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, Wes Granger's interview kind of hit it on the spots when he talked about getting on the forums and staying on them. Those who succeed the most are on the forum frequently. You know, of the last, you know, four contests, I think probably two-thirds, if not three-fourths, of all the winners are ones who are, you know, consistently on the forum. You know, I got involved in the Smack Talk this time around, and it's fun. I mean, me and Dan would, you know, shoot it back and forth. Larry Appleton, you know, we had some fun together with our avatars, and I threw up a bulky interview, avatar for a while, and tried to get him to take that obnoxious, nasty-looking avatar down, and he still wouldn't. But, you know, Jason G going on, and, you know, he pulled a punch at me with, you know, coining a new phrase of pulling a Sean and of aborting fast early, and, you know, things like that. They're just fun. You know, it's guys having fun and motivating each other. You know, Legion was a big help as well. And, you know, actually Jason, real early on, when I got on, he kicked me pretty hard in the balls back when I first joined the forums after Adonis Transformation 2. And he just put it to me in a pretty strong challenge and pretty long rant, as it were. And, you know, if you put yourself out there, you're going to get it. You're going to get back what you need. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the guys are going to be, you know, harder straight shooters, and other guys are going to take a different approach. And, you know, one way, shape, or form, it's going to be beneficial. So, you know, if there's people on here that are just kind of lurking and, you know, not really, you know, on the forums, or maybe they're on it, they're not putting themselves out there, you got nothing to lose. you know, throw out an introduction post, throw up your stats, put up your picture, and, you know, you'll get the encouragement and the kicks in the balls every now and then that you'll need to succeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just using every resource that's possibly available.
Absolutely.
And it's just and you're right. It's just throwing your hat in the ring. It's the same thing's happening on the women's side. It's the people who end up doing the best. I mean, not all, but most of the people that finish in the competitions are all active in the forums. And so tell me this. So being besides the feedback, but does it also help you to help other people in there too?
Yeah, it does, because it just kind of like reminds you that we're all in this together. We're all doing the same thing, and that's one of the things that makes the forum so great, is we're all doing the same workout. Most of us have, you know, if not all, have, you know, bought into the whole eat, stop, eat, you know, intermittent fasting. We've also been, you know, thoroughly had our past mindsets demystified and debunked of, you know, the rubbish that we all subscribed and bought into about nutrition and fitness, you know, by you three guys. Thank you. And, I just think it makes a lot of sense to, you know, help other people as well, you know, by going on, you know, I can't keep up with everyone's blogs, mm-hmm. but, you know, I could follow, you know, five or six guys relatively easy and, you know, just subscribe, you know, to theirs and make it easy, you know, so you get email posts and I don't go on every single one comment on every single one. I don't have the time for that, but, you know, if I pop in there, you know, once or twice a week or so, then, you know, I can do that, and, you know, it's kind of like the Jenny Craig forum for guys, as it were. You know, we don't step on the scale and get cheered on, but when we do throw up, you know, some new picks or something, we'll get feedback, and it's helpful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just keeping everyone moving forward.
Right.
No one person has to support everyone, as long as somebody somewhere's, like you said, chipping in every now and then.
Yeah. One other kind of tip, as it were, that I just recently discovered. I mean, guys have talked about green tea before, of, you know, suppressing the appetite during a fast, mm-hmm. and that's been good, and chugging out a bunch of water. I've recently kind of discovered that drinking a bunch right the first thing before you get up, even before breakfast, is helpful as well. But chicken bouillon, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but chicken broth, basically.
Yeah.
Like hardly any calories in it, and makes it tastes like a meal, and it gives them a really fulfilling, and so that's just...
Oh, just like a soup, but just out of chicken broth.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Richard Lean, I think, did a lot of that.
Yeah. He's got a bunch of tricks, and I've hopefully haven't made this interview nearly as entertaining as his, because I don't want to develop a cult-like following like he has. He told me about his Vegas trip.
Oh yeah, no, he was pretty popular in Vegas, that's for sure.
Oh, that's cool.
And he was shocked too. He didn't realize that everyone else had been listening to his interview. So
that was pretty hilarious. But it's been fun kind of getting to know a bunch of the guys as well. There's about Richard, Jason, Lee, Wes, and all of us kind of chat offline as well. And Dan and I had a little dialogue going back and forth during the contest. So it's been fun.
Well, that's great. All right, Sean. Well, I mean, that was a great interview. And congrats on your finish. You looked good. And thanks for sharing your thoughts here today.
Absolutely. Glad to.
All right. So for Sean Rafferty, I'm John Barbin, and that's your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.